CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Ink Studs, the radio show where we talk about comics. I'm discombobulated today. Is that the right word, guys? Discombobulated?
Pick whatever word you want.
Okay. There's the manly voice of Steve Rolston. Today I'm joined by manly Steve Rolston and manly Vern Andrew.
Hello.
Hello. This Sunday, both these fine gentlemen will be at the Vancouver Art Gallery from 11 to 5 at Vancouver's very own Comics and Stories. Having both these guys on to kind of talk about their work, why you should come down to the gallery on Sunday and check it out. I think it's going to be a fun event. It's free, so really you have no excuse for not going. I'm serious. Everyone that's listening, you have to go. And it's got a whole plethora of special guests, including one of my favorites, Kim Deitch, and other folks coming to town like Derek Kirk Kim, Jesse Hamm, local folks, Julie Morstad, Chris Von Zombathy, and Tom Horsek, who all have books for Drawn a Quarterly from their Petit Livre book series. Petit Livre books. That's basically saying the same thing twice, right?
Mm-hmm.
Petit Livre series. Yeah, I failed French. James Stoku, Brandon Graham, buddy boys that draw the same thing from Seattle. I'm just kidding.
Hey.
I love both
their
works.
Awesome.
And their storylines intertwine wonderfully. And I think they're great cartoonists, and they're definitely cartoonists to the sense of the term cartoons. Mortitat, please don't give him liquor. He's like the gremlin of comic conventions. I'm just kidding. He's a swell guy.
He's a great guy to talk to. Just don't trust anything he says. He did not invent furries, contrary to, you know, previous interviews he's done.
I think the last time I saw him, he was telling some poor kid that he was James Jean, and telling him he can get a gig for Fables and stuff. And
yeah, that was fun. But that's what happens when you put beer in people.
Yeah, like I said, he's like a gremlin, you know? It's you don't get water on the gremlin, you don't get beer on the Mortitat. Who else we got here? James Lloyd, Damian Wilcox, Mr. Steve Rolson, Miriam Labicki, Hojwe Menavar, who you'll recognize from The Georgia Strait, Way Off Main, very sad comics, and Ken Bosom, Robin Bougie, Owen Plummer, Gabriel Frazira, I totally mispronounced that, I'm a terrible person, Mike Meyer, Robin Thompson, Kelly Everhart, Steve LeCouliard, Fern Andrew, Torrin Atkinson, Stephanie Blakely, Nick Christian, and about 20 other people. I don't think I'm going to go through them all right now. Do I need to go through them all, guys?
You're lazy. You're bad.
You've got an hour. You can go through them over the hour.
Okay. Where was I? Jesse DeVage, Laura Evile, Susan Ferguson, Trevor Frick, Sarah Haxby, Mary Kim,
Donald King,
Carrie McKay, Justin Pesieka?
Pesieka.
I'm sorry, Justin. I'm a douche. I can't pronounce things. Kriti Ripchick? Ripchick? I'm a terrible person today. Dex Thompson, Beth Wagner, Ted Wilson, Critical Hit Comics, my buddy Ed with New Reliable Press, Paraverlog Books by artists who do some really neat things, the Hell Passports, which feature a whole lot of different alternative folks, the Radar Friends, and many more that aren't listed on here, or else I would say their names.
You didn't even want to say the people who were on there. Come on, admit it. You're just afraid you don't know how to say anything.
You're going to make me cry, Steve.
Yeah, I'm under-caffeinated, sorry.
Oh, good thing I got you your root beer. Oh, wait, A&W doesn't have caffeine in it. I really
did fail you. Yeah.
I failed these guys. Say, normally, I'm on time, early always, and the one time where I say, be here at a certain time, I'm late.
We're disappointed.
I'm disappointed.
The world is just disappointed in you.
Now, Steve, you've been on before. And it's well to have
remember
you back.
That. Yeah.
That was actually quite some time ago. It's about probably 2 years ago. So
sure, if you say so.
It's been probably 2 years. We've been doing the show a long time. Now, Vern, on the other hand, I have not had you on yet, and I don't know why. I think that's a fault of my own. But I'm happy you've joined us today.
No, thank you for having me.
You've got quite a storied history in comics and animation, from what I understand.
Storied? Well, I go back, I guess, to the early 70s, which is when I started. One of the first commercial gigs I did was Captain Canuck, Canada's own superhero.
Canada's own Mormon superhero, from what I understand.
Mormon superhero. Well, Richard Cumley was born again, and he tried to put a lot of that into the comics. So
he's not Mormon. Okay. That's different, isn't
Captain
it?
Captain Canuck, no, he was, an RCMP secret agent sort of guy. Yeah.
Now, I heard someone tell me that John Byrne tried to get Marvel to buy the rights to Captain Canuck to use in Alpha Flight. Does anyone know anything about that?
No, nothing about it, no.
And then Richard wouldn't sell it because he couldn't know that it would still have the same moral standards of the character.
Yeah, I had met the fellows from Captain Canuck at a high school career day.
Really?
Yeah, it was kind of neat. They had Jean-Claude Sanabon had a big drawing table out there, and he was inking this huge poster, and I was totally enamored with it. And I got to know him, and I got to know George, and I started to hang around the studio. And Richard didn't take very kindly to having Klingons around, but I took advantage of the opportunity, brought my work in and chatted about comics and stuff, and actually struck a pretty good friendship with both of them.
And that was your entrance into the fine world of comics.
Yeah, I had decided to pursue more traditional, newspaper sort of comics. I took a correspondence course called Cartoonorama. Because back in the early 70s, you have to remember, there were no schools. Mm-hmm. Sheridan didn't exist. Really, the only way you could get into the comics was by being an apprentice, yeah. Which in effect is what I did.
It was almost a trade.
Yeah, it very much was, for sure. And then we've got the schools. You can go to school for a couple of years, come out and call yourself a professional comic artist for all, whatever that's worth.
The big paychecks come rolling.
We're still waiting.
Now, what are you going to have at the convention on Sunday? Tell me about the project you're working on.
Okay, well, it sort of ties in with the whole Captain Canuck era, because I would go in to show my stuff, and I needed something to draw. And Richard was a pretty straight-laced, stuffy sort of fellow, and I was a long-haired hippie sort. So we didn't kind of get on, and I kind of figured, well, all right, I have to do something superhero-ish. So I created this cartoon character that I kind of figured would really piss Richard off. Called him Captain Cannabis. And he was designed after Captain Canuck, had the same general costume type, only it was green instead of red. So I kind of worked with that character for a while, and I actually went ahead and did my first comic book back in the early 70s, registered it with the Canadian government, and got an official Canadian government copyright certificate for Captain Cannabis, the comic book character. I actually have spent more of my time working in the animation side of the business, A, because there's a lot of work, and B, because it pays a lot better.
Yeah.
And there's people. I mean, one of the things you have to come to terms with as a comic book artist is it's a very solitary undertaking. Whereas when you're working in animation, you're still doing the same general sort of thing, but you're interacting with people, which really I found helped the creative juices. You could move a project along till you were kind of burnt out, pass it on to other people. They would do their thing and come at it with fresh eyes. Whereas when you're doing your own thing on a comic drawing board at 2 o'clock in the morning and you run out of ideas, you know, there's no place you can go. So I ended up, through circumstances in the early 90s, where I was having to sort of reevaluate. I went through comic books, animation. From animation, I got into computer science, believe it or not. Ended up graduating as a systems analyst and spent a fair number of years in the marketing side of things, doing advertising work and whatnot, because I had a high-tech bent to me, and high tech was big in the 80s.
I had no idea about this about you.
Yeah, there you go. In the early 90s, as I say, when I was forced to sort of reevaluate things and step back and say, well, what is it that I really want to do with my time? I figured, well, you know, this story was really important to me, even though I thought it was kind of a castaway. So I started doing a fair bit of research into, because if I'm going to, like, Captain Cannabis is, I mean, we've got aliens and conspiracy theories coming out of the yin-yang, and I had to do a fair bit of research just try to, even though we're dealing with, you know, really obscure, weird stuff, I tried to make it kind of as credible as I possibly could.
What kind of conspiracy ideologies are you drawing from?
Well, it sort of falls into the whole alien thing. I mean, when you're...
Like the gray?
Well, you're talking about the grays, a lot of what Zachariah Sitchin has come up with in his tales. Are you familiar with him at all?
No.
Oh, dear.
That was a sad no.
No.
But enlighten me. And enlighten the audience.
Zachariah Sitchin is... he calls himself a Hebrew scholar. He's one of the few people who actually has taken the time to understand Sumerian. The Sumerian cuneiform language, which is, if you know anything at all about Sumeria, you know that it is what is now what's called Iraq, and that is the birthplace of civilization for all intents and purposes. So as the oil companies were digging for oil, they kept on bumping into artifacts, which ended up getting scooped up and put into universities, and it's all done in cuneiform on tablets, and these are like, you know, 6,000-8,000 years old. So Mr. Sitchin decided that he would do a search for the original Bible, Hebrew Bible. He believed that the one that exists is wrong, and it's based on a previous document. So he started digging into these Sumerian cuneiform tablets. And what he discovered was that there was, known to the Sumerians, this race of beings that had come from another planet who had come, and basically the long and the short of it is, created us, man, as hybrid slaves to work their minds, because they were just tired of it. And he's published quite widely on it, and in a lot of ways, he's discredited by a lot of people because they say, well, you know, he's got an agenda. So I dug a little bit deeper, and I started reading a bunch of the other scholars who had translated the Sumerian tablets. And interestingly enough, what Mr. Sitchin has translated and what the others have are very jive.
Interesting.
That's the short version of it. So I'm using that as the premise of the story that I've created. The story is called 420, and I'll explain to you why it's called 420. it's the Captain Cannabis origin story, and of course Captain Cannabis has to get his powers from somewhere, and he gets it from Cosmic Pot, and if you only get Cosmic Pot from aliens, so, I mean, there you go.
Very apropos for being at the art gallery.
And I'll just tie in the 420. So why did I use the name 420? Some people have basically flogged me for that one. But I had originally written a screenplay. It's written as a feature film. And I've chopped it up into 12 stories or chapters that I'm publishing as 12 comic books, which will be at Comics and Stories. One of them, the first one, is as far as I got so far. And it was originally called The Strange Attractor. Because of the alien and how his presence affects everything around them. Strange Attractor is a scientific term. I sent draft 5 of the screenplay out to Praxis, which is a group that's associated with Simon Fraser University. And they have a screenplay reading program. And one of the recommendations of the reader was to find a different name. The Strange Attractor was just a little bit too out there. So I was digging through my paperwork, filing stuff, and I came across my copyright certificate for my Captain Cannabis comic book. If you remember back to the beginning of this, this was back in 1976, 77. And I took a look at it, and I read the date, and I kind of took a take, and I read the date again. And it turns out that for some very strange reason, the Canadian government issued me this copyright certificate, official, stamp, signed, and everything from Ottawa, for Captain Cannabis, a comic book dated April 20th, 1977. We need to na-na-na-na-na-na. Because April 20th, anybody who's in the culture knows that April 20th is 420, April being the fourth month, 20th being the 20th date, 420, get it?
That's basically when the art gallery grounds and the outside are taken over by a bunch of teenagers.
Exactly, yeah.
Smoking a lot of weed.
Old people like me standing around. So as far as I know, that is the earliest cross-correlated, credible, documented reference, cross-reference between the cannabis culture, Captain Cannabis, and 420 as being April 20th. Now, I'm not going to take credit for creating 420 because I had absolutely no clue that that was the date and it meant anything until I looked at the copyright certificate a few years ago. But there you go. That's the story.
It's another conspiracy theory.
It is.
Maybe the Canadian government knew what it was doing.
You know, you might be... Pierre Trudeau was involved then, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was still in power.
Fuddle-duddle, my friend.
You bet.
Fuddle-duddle. I think I'm going to play a song. One of your songs, Vern.
Oh, thank you.
Now, what song shall I play?
Well, I think you should start out with... let's do Open Your Mind.
Open Your Mind. Okay, we'll be right back with Vern Andrew, and we'll get some words of Steve Rolston.
Nah.
I'm gonna get you out of here.
CITR 101.9 FM. I got to turn that loop function off of the computer. Tell us about that song, Bird.
Open Your Mind. It started out as a bass lick. I just was playing around and came up with a nice bass lick I liked, and figured I'd try to do some words along with it, but of course I'm not a vocalist, so I did a search, and somebody had reverse engineered the Mr. Speak and Spell audio engine and mm-hmm. made a little software program. So I wrote the lyrics and used Mr. Speak and Spell to, and just changed the pitch of it so I could get some harmonies and whatnot, and that's what we got.
I've had some friends that have played, did some music using some of those, and had a lot of fun.
Oh, that's quite neat.
This one guy, I think his, I forget his real his name, but Music Not Breathing, he'll actually, what he does is he takes any old children's toy that makes music and then totally turns it into an instrument that's a lot more functional and stuff. He has like this whole library of them.
It's amazing what you can do with software these days.
Mm-hmm.
Don't even have to be a musician anymore.
Nope, I've got, yeah, I know people like that. Mr. Rolston.
Yes?
Yes, that sexy, manly timber there. What are you going to have for us at the Comics and Stories?
At the most fabulous event this Sunday at the Art Gallery.
From 11 till 5?
Yes, I will be there with a selection of comics and graphic novels I've done over the last 8 years. I will have, my next project that's coming out is a Minx graphic novel called Amico Superstar, which comes out, won't be out till October 1st, but I will have a couple advanced copies that people can, you know, peep at, you know, check out, you know, spill things on, you know, whatever they want to do. I'm very proud of this one. It was written by Mariko Tamaki. And I think it's the best project I've done yet as far as me syncing well with the writer. I think we're really on the same wavelength with a lot of the stuff in there. So I'm showing that off and, yeah, selling other comics I've done. So like the Degrassi graphic novel, mini comics I've done over the years, you know, stuff like that.
I got to say, the Amico, it looks awesome.
Thank you.
It really seems like it's the type of work that you've been kind of waiting to do.
Yeah, well, it's I don't know, I guess the Degrassi kind of got me, was training for this, because this is another sort of teenage drama, but it's more than that. There's suburban drama and angst, but there's also the, you know, it's a geeky girl discovers she wants to be an underground performance artist, so it's, you know, nice coming of age, but there's also lots of great visuals, because, you know, the underground art scene. So, yeah, it's just a combination of lots of things I enjoy drawing, and, yeah, I enjoyed teenage drama. I mean, I watch Degrassi all the time.
Do you watch Gossip Girl?
No, I don't go for the rich bitch teenage drama stuff, which I haven't watched Gossip Girl, so I guess that's just I got from the commercials, but yeah.
It's a good way of describing it, but I love it. I love terrible teen dramas.
I like the more realistic teenage dramas. Well, even though, yeah.
The funny thing about Degrassi I love is kind of, you know, it's in a wholesome neighborhood, yada, yada. I remember I lived in Toronto for a couple months and I'm wandering around like, oh, there's Degrassi Street. Oh my God, it's like Hastings.
A lot of Toronto is like Hastings.
It's not a classy neighborhood.
Oh, it's probably changed since back in the day when they first filmed The Kids of Degrassi Street.
Yeah. It's hard to believe. How many years? 25, 30 years? No, it can't be that long. But 25 years, probably.
It's been a while.
It's been a while. Sorry, I didn't mean to do that. So tell me about your mini-comics that you put out.
Well, the mini-comics are, I guess I've got two of them right now. Yeah, two of them. Those, you know, little comics. Both of them are actually failed attempts at a 24-hour comic, which is when I try to do a 24-page comic in 24 hours. Both of the times of these two, I made a valiant effort, but at the end of 24 hours, I was insane, sick, crazy, and hadn't finished the comics. You know, I'd drawn it all, but hadn't inked it. So, but I liked both the stories enough that later on, I've, you know, pulled them off the shelf and finished inking them, and then just, you know, did a little photocopy job, mini comics, just to get it out there. So you can only get those at comic book conventions.
And what do you like about doing comic book conventions?
What do I like?
Do you like doing comic book conventions? I know some people hate it, some people love it.
I do enjoy it. Usually when I'm at the convention, I'm a zombie, just because, well, sometimes I'm hungover from
Steve.
Drinking with the other artists who are in town for the weekend. And even if I'm not hungover, I usually still end up as a zombie by the end of the day, just from, you know, talking to so many people, so much interaction. And usually I'm a reclusive kind of guy who's not used to talking so much and actually having to look at people.
Well, earlier...
But I do like it.
Vern was talking about the feeling of isolation with cartooning. Does doing conventions, does that kind of give you like a new energy?
It depends on the convention and the particular experience. I think usually when you're stuck behind the table the whole time, you're mostly just dealing with, you know, fans and people who come up to you. So it all depends on which people come up to you. I mean, if it's just people coming up asking for Batman sketches, it might not bump up my enthusiasm too much. But if it's people who've been following my stuff for years and they actually, you know, have good conversations with me, that helps. Also, for me, it's actually talking to the other artists, seeing what the other artists are doing, especially if you're talking to artists who live in another city, so you only ever see them at conventions. Mm-hmm. I mean, and if it's someone whose stuff you really dig and you really enjoy, you could see the originals, you know, you get to talk about the tools of the trade or blah, 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 all that stuff. That's the stuff that usually gets me more pumped and enthused to do comics.
Yeah, comics.
Huh, yeah.
Process. It's all about process. Now, one of the things that's come out since I've had you on last, and I was trying to figure out, I think it's about 2 years ago, your TMNT storyline.
Yes, the Ninja Turtles.
Tell us about that one.
I drew an issue. It was issue 28 of Tales of the TMNT. It was one of the title where basically each issue is a standalone story about Ninja Turtles or one of the Ninja Turtles or whatever. It was written by Murphy. And basically, the story was Raphael drinking in a bar. A foot soldier, a rival ninja, happens to be drinking in the same bar. But really, they're just drinking, so they don't care about that they're enemies or whatever. And, you know, they get kidnapped by alien robots and have to fight their way free. So, you know, it's a very deep intellectual story, which is half drinking and half fighting. So it's pretty fun for me, just because I usually don't. I draw drinking and most of the comics I've ever done. There's usually people drinking booze.
Well, your first comics were just a couple of bar louts, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'll probably go back to those guys someday. But the other half was, you know, fighting, you know, Ninja Turtle, you know, fighting weapons, cool stuff, robots exploding, which isn't what I usually draw. So that was fun, sort of stretch my muscles that way. And, of course, you know, I grew up on the cartoon as a kid, so
I loved
it. There's a little bit of, you know, geek satisfaction to work on a Turtles comic.
Who was your favorite turtle?
When I was younger, it was Michelangelo, but nowadays it would be Raphael. So it was cool to get to draw him.
I'm going to go with Raphael. Vern, do you have a favorite turtle?
I have to beg ignorance on the turtle thing. I wasn't.
All right, we're going to give you Donatello. You just got to live with him.
All right.
What's wrong with Donatello? You made it sound like it's something bad.
He's not the best.
Great. He's the smart guy.
It's not like smart loser.
Leonardo's the loser.
Well, Leonardo's like the Cyclops from the X-Men.
He's a tool.
He's the tool leader, but at least he can fight well.
My girlfriend's playing the X-Men video game, one of the video games. He's like, why is this Cyclops character such a tool? I'm like, it's good that passes on in the video game, too.
Yeah, that's good. You know, keep it the same. Consistency.
Keep it real, yo. It's totally taking everything in the wrong direction. House of Mystery that you just did?
Yeah.
That's your most recent published thing?
House of Mystery number 4, which came out like 2 weeks ago. It's from Vertigo Comics. It's sort of in the same world as the Fables comic books. And in each issue, there's characters telling a story. So in each issue, there's maybe a 4-page or 10-page story within the story, so they bring in a guest artist. So yeah, for the most recent one, number 4, they brought me in. Got to do a nice little 7-page story about a horny witch who's been exiled to San Francisco. And I got to get colored by my local buddy Dave McKeag, who I've been wanting to work with for a while now, so that was fun.
Now, is Dave going to be at Sunday's convention?
He's probably going to be at home trying to meet his deadlines. That's my guess.
Dave was supposed to join us today, but unfortunately Marvel Comics would rather that he work on his comics than talk to us today. Boo to Marvel.
Boo to business.
Business. Boo to make money. Okay, I'm going to play another song. I think I'm going to play the Buck 65. Some good Canadiana. And then we get back. Vern's got another thing to talk about. And then we got something else to talk about with you there, Mr. Olson.
Yes.
So we'll be right back. Inkstud, CITR, 101.9 FM.
Do you remember the old ways of rocking it, laying the law down, a microphone, talking it, telling it, spelling it out in block capitals, cardboard boxing, a rap battle in life. Dang, diggy, dang, a dang, a dang, diggy, diggy, dang, diggy, dang, a dang, a dang, diggy, 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 dang, a dang, dang, a diggy, diggy, dang, diggy, dang, a dang, dang, a diggy, diggy, dang, diggy, dang, a dang, dang, a diggy, diggy, dang. Border towns burning, churches with the roof off, searching for purchases, we play fighting, goof off, streets ain't safe, television talking trash, traveling, horseback collecting scars, clocking cash, pocket changes, rocket rages, seeking the heat, straight muscling, hustling, freaking the beat, sharks circling, working bees, buzzing like cell phones, hell knows, yes, y'all at assholes and elbows, customized hot rod, fire you should face, funny paper, shit, money can't buy a good taste, heads popping off, you're an orgasm addict, cock buzzing, supper time, you're having haddock, white rice and vegetables, wild stelly legible, people skills dubious, memory incredible, lemons and rusty cages, dusty pages turning over, calling shots, color commentary, earning clover, tenfold, leaving women wondering, men fooled, struggling, sick in the head like Glenn Gould, like dang, diggy, dang, a dang, a dang, diggy, diggy, dang, diggy, dang, a dang, a dang, diggy, 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 dang, a dang, dang, a diggy, diggy, dang, diggy, dang, a dang, dang, a diggy, diggy, dang, diggy, dang, a dang, dang, a diggy, diggy, dang. Boycott, don't believe the hype, shoot the umpire up in the air, the truth rang out like gunfire, guarantor, you need Lou Reed and Beefheart, push the button, burn the house down and restart, drum sends messages, touched by a golden finger Midas, beside his head stuck up, the colon sphincter 6 million ways, household made of glass, edge look you dead in your face, and say, take a last faceless, the vapors are odorless and tasteless, silly goose, too stupid to realize you're racist, motorcycle chain and disdain for the money clippers, strippers taking time off, wearing fuzzy bunny slippers, Las Vegas war zone, idiots and sundry dummy stumbling, drooling, the rumbling, a hungry tummy, zigzagging, crisscrossing, hell's down and heaven's up, animal noises, the sounds of engines revving up like...
CITR 101.9 FM. I was just ranting about how there's a time and place for every kind of comic, right, guys?
Yep,
sure.
Well, I like reading the arty stuff, you know, the latest thing from Picture Box, and then I like to go home and read my latest Grant Morrison Batman issue.
Little Annie Fanny.
Will Elder.
Mm-hmm.
A moment of silence. Just passed away a couple of months ago.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, beautiful work. Beautiful artwork.
Incredible. He is... Yeah. I highly recommend people take a look at Mad Playboy of Art from Fantagraphics. It's a huge tome looking at Will Elder's life in comics and stuff.
Oh, wow.
It's a really great book. And Will Elder is the man. It's at just another EC guy passed away recently, so...
Well, I mean, that's the thing with it. A lot of the people in the business when I was doing, when I was coming into it, a lot of these guys were like really old then.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing it for a long time. So,
Jack Davis, I really want to interview, but I've been trying and trying to find a way to get in touch. And then someone just said, dude, his hearing is so bad, you shouldn't even bother. Yeah. It'd be like me yelling for half an hour. And I just want to hear his New Orleans accent.
Mm-hmm.
So. Fern, you have another book there.
I do. Actually, I just got this yesterday. Back in the late 70s, when I first came back out to Vancouver, I teamed up with a local writer by the name of Jim McPherson, who was doing a series of undergrounds. A lot of what's called alternate comic books these days started as undergrounds.
Mm-hmm. Which we love on the Extents.
Well, that's how I... kind of got into comic books, was hanging around the head shops and finding the Furry Freak Brothers and those sorts of things. That was, as opposed to, Marvel and DC with... Anyway, Jim was looking for some artists, so I got involved with his Fantasia line. I worked on it for, I think, issue 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. And then I ended up moving back east. But I've recently rekindled my relationship with him, and he's moved from writing comic books to actually writing novels. So we've been chatting over the years, and you know, he's been wondering how to go about publishing and whatnot. And earlier this year, he asked me if I'd take on the task of doing a cover for his book and helping him do the internals of it. So I took it on, and we spent the last few months doing the artwork and going through multiple proofreads of the inside of the book. And he came by yesterday, and I'll hold it up for the camera here so your audience can see.
Feeling theosodic, or feeling, I can't even speak.
Theosidal. Yeah, whip this guy.
I was going to say theosodic or theosidal.
Theosidal. And it marks the debut of Jim as a novel publisher. I'm really quite proud with the way it came out.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Be nice to, and you'll have copies of that for people to check out.
Well,
on Sunday,
I've got to drop this back off at Jim because he wants to read it and approve the publishers to go ahead and do the print job. I'll see if I can chat with him and have. I do have some large printouts of the cover though.
Okay,
I'll have it to show.
Nice, and don't forget, folks. Both these fine gentlemen, Vern Andrew and Steve Rolson, will be at Comics and Stories at Vancouver Art Gallery this Sunday, August 24th, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m.
And I would like to impress upon people that usually the show is held at the Heritage Hall down on Main and 16th, and every other year you've had to pay, what is it, $325?
Yeah.
Admission?
Something
25,
like that.
25, what?
Something like that. Yeah, to pay an admission.
Quarters. One steal of quarters.
Yeah. This year, because the Art Gallery is hosting their crazy show, they are providing the venue for us to have comics and stories there, and because it's in the Art Gallery, it will be free.
But the crazy show will not be free.
No, which means you should come down and come up and see all of us struggling artists up in comics and stories, because you can do that for free.
I agree. And it will feature Kim Deitch, who is in the show Crazy.
Yeah,
stuff featured in there. As well, on Saturday night, there'll be an event at the Art Gallery, A Night with Deitch, which I'm putting on, which is features animation from the 20s, 30s, and 40s from the Warner Brothers, Fleischer's, Terry Toons, Columbia, and much more. It's
Do you have some of the Fleischer early 3D stuff? Some of the early Popeye 3D?
No, I didn't get any of the Popeye stuff. It's unfortunate. I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I got some Fleischer sing-alongs, which look awesome. They're crazy. It's a pretty eclectic mix. I'm really blown away. I never really looked at all the Terry Toon stuff, but some of that is just incredible. It's just like the life that people put into these cartoons back then. It's wonderful.
This was pre-special effects, and it was all the imagination pouring out onto the screen. It's wonderful stuff.
So it'll be neat. This is definitely a pilot time in comics and or in cartooning. And Kim will also be showing a short movie he did when he was 16 called Dial M for Monster, and it's a kind of horror thing him and his friends did, and it's pretty fantastic. It's a weird, silent thing, and it's just creepy, and yeah, it's filmed in New York, and I don't think you could ever do that again, what they were doing in there. You'll see.
Sweet.
Awesomeness. Mr. Rolston.
Yes. I'm still here.
You're such a quiet man. Quiet man.
I'm sorry.
What should you be sorry about? It's a trait. I'm obnoxious and noisy.
Oh, you got that right, so. All right.
Okay. Tell us about schooling people.
I'll school you, buddy. Well, I do teach a part-time course at Van Arts, also known as the Vancouver Institute of Media Arts, but everyone says Van Arts. And next one actually starts up on September 8th, so it's a good time to sign up. It's a 12-week course, just like 3 hours every Monday night. It's basically I show people the entire process of creating a comic book, cover all the basics from proper script technique, different tools to use, penciling tips and tricks and stuff, all the stuff that I learned the hard way or, gathered from other artists over the years.
It's called being an apprentice.
Well, if you're not lucky enough to find someone to teach you all this stuff in their own studio,
it's called being an apprentice.
Vern.
You know, I know people are always asking if, you know, if I know anyone they could apprentice for. Nobody wants an apprentice these days.
Well, it's changed. You know, back when I was doing it, there was lots of opportunities for people, specifically in animation studios, to go in and really get your drawing chops up.
Well, I think one problem is that a lot of cartoonists work out of their house.
That's always been the case. So,
yeah,
like I can't have an apprentice because it would just be a little creepy in my, you know, one bedroom apartment. You know.
Well, Steve walking around in nothing but his boxers.
Telling tales out of school, when I did some work with Captain Canuck, I was actually moving from Vancouver. I was going to Ottawa to work on the heavy metal film, and Captain Canuck had relocated to Calgary at that point. And I dropped in on George Freeman just as a place to stay overnight and say hi and move on. And within an hour of being there, I was strapped to a drawing table in his one-bedroom apartment, and I didn't get out of there for 3 weeks.
Well, there's a couple different options for people to find avenues into learning about comics. They can be forced indentured labor or learn from Mr. Olson here. And or can people find information on this?
They can go to www.vanarts.com. Check it under the part-time courses. There'll be more info up there. Yeah, and the main focus on the course is storytelling, because that's the most important thing for comics. So there's, you know, all the practical tools of the trade stuff, but there's also a focus on, you know, choosing the right camera angles, composition, acting, all the, you know, hundreds of things that go into good storytelling.
Using different facial expressions?
Yeah, we talk a lot about that stuff. So, yeah, so, you know, just trying to make people draw good comics and try to get them over the hurdles that you know, I had to go the long route and figure out myself.
And that's what we want on the Ink Studs, people to draw good comics. Now, you just mentioned, just dropped out there, you worked on heavy metal.
Well, yes and no. I didn't actually work on heavy metal. Marv Newland, who is going to be at your
thing on Saturday night.
Thing on Saturday. I was going to say thing, but I didn't think that was appropriate.
Yeah, I don't mind. You can call whatever. You can call it a hootenanny.
I was actually working at his studio, working on Sing Be Sing. And that was wrapping up. This was, what was it, 79? And there was very little work left in town, but heavy metal was gearing up. And I had called Atkinson's Film Art out in Ottawa, and they basically said, look, we need people. You show up, you know, we'll give you a desk. So I jumped in my Gremlin and headed east.
2 inches from the pavement.
2 inches from the pavement, yeah. One of the stops along the way, my father had relocated to the Toronto area, so I stopped in there. And the comic industry is such that, you know, you'd correspond with artists via letter. You'd write letters and send letters, because this was pre-internet days. And one of the artists that I had gotten to know through correspondence was Jim Craig. Who worked on Orb and whatnot out of the Toronto independent scene. And I called him up to have coffee, went out for coffee, and he said, you know, you should come by and see what we're doing. So on the Monday morning, I dropped into the Nelvana Studios in downtown Toronto, and they were working on their competing feature film, Rock and Rule, which was called Drats at the time, later called Rock and Rule. And anyway, I was in there, showed my portfolio, and they hired me on the spot. So I didn't actually make it to heavy metal. I stayed, and I spent 2 years working on the rock and roll feature, which was a wonderful experience.
It's got a lot of really weird people in it, too, like as far as voices, doesn't it? Like rockers?
Yeah, it was the focus of it was to be a lot of music, musical-oriented, so when I had started originally, they were going to have Mick Jagger as the lead character. His Mock is the villain in the story. And the Rolling Stones were on a bit of a low at the time, and just as they were going to sign the deal with them, they bailed because one of their projects took off. So then they moved over. David Bowie was supposed to take over. Same thing happened with him just as they were ready to ink. So they ended up with Lou Reed, I think.
Who is my favorite of the list of names you've listed off there.
So. Yeah, no, he did some great stuff on there, actually. Debbie Harry, who was in her prime at the time. And, you know, this is early 80s, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of the music dates it. But we were doing some stuff on that film that had never been done before. for example, with special effects, and this is what got me into the computer side of the world, we were the first shop that contracted what has now become Industrial Light and Magic for special effects.
Really?
So, and we had, like, Disney's Wise Men come up, Frank and Ollie having seminars with us, and we're constantly interacting with Lucas down in San Francisco, doing all these setups for all the optical effects at that time. There was no digital stuff. And I finally got a copy of it after all of these years, about 2 years ago. They've now released it on DVD, and it's still a wonderful film, I think.
I have it. I just haven't gone around to watching it yet, but I will. Dear. I will watch it going, Vern Andrew.
This man will be flogged after the show.
For anyone on the UBC campus, come out front of the Student Union building to watch Steve Rolson and Vern Andrew beat the snot out of me.
No, that's a good time.
Now, Steve, one thing someone suggested I ask you about is gambling.
What?
This is specifically a question from Don King.
Ask him about his gambling. What's up with that?
Oh, he's well, okay, but I think he actually won money off me last night, so I don't know what his problem is. No, I mean, one thing, the things about being an artist as a business or as a job is, or at least in my case, I kind of lost a hobby. I mean, my hobby used to be drawing, but now that's my job. So
that's
sometimes
why I play music.
Yeah, no, I have no musical talent, so I had to find some new hobby to replace.
Neither do I.
My new hobby is building gambling devices. You know, little gambling wheels, you know, roulette boards. Last one I built was a Plinko board. You know, just little things that I take to parties or, you know, maybe, you know, some select comic book conventions. Creators will be, you know, having a little fun behind the tables with, you know, little gambling devices. It's a good time. It's definitely not illegal. Just good times, that's all.
You guys play for chips, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, chips. You know, buttons, artwork, whatever. We trade fans, yeah.
You can have him. I don't want him anymore.
It's horrible. So, Sunday, Conference of Stories. We got these two boys here. Thank you for our Keller, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. We're almost done here. We've just got a couple minutes left. I just want to say the shows we got coming up on the Ink Studs. Next week, I'll be airing an interview I did a couple weeks ago with Eddie Campbell, a fantastic Scotsman in Australia. He was on a break in Chicago between doing interviews and did an interview with me as part of his interviews. There we go. It's fabulous. We're talking about his new book, The Amazing Monsieur Léotard. Or The Remarkable Monsieur Léotard. It's fabulous. Take a look at it. I really recommend it. It's out from First Second Books. Week after that, we'll be talking to Trevor Alexopoulos and about his books. Hot Breath Water, I think, was the name of one of them from Spark Club Books. I'm really bad today. I can't remember things. September 11th. Don't forget. Dash Shaw will be joining me to discuss his brick of a book, Bottomless Belly Button, which blew me away. I sat down and read it, and it's fantastic. I recommend. The thing is, like, it's a brick. Literally, like, it's a brown cover, and it looks like a brick. You can hurt someone with it. And after that, I think Ed Brisson will be joining me to discuss You Ain't No Dancer Volume 3, in which you...
I'm in that.
I was going to say, you have a story in that.
Yes.
Why don't you tell me a little bit about the story that you got in there?
Which story was that? Oh, yes, that's the little five-page story. It was actually written by my girlfriend, Sabina, so it's her first published work, I think. So yeah, it's a nice little romantic story about a girl and a typewriter.
For those that don't know, Steve is a softie.
Hey, now.
No.
I'll show you.
No.
You're just asking for a flogging now.
I think I need a beat down after this week. Any last comments, gents?
We should probably, you know, I think the Comics and Stories this weekend, the artist I'm most excited to see come to town is probably Derek Kirk Kim.
There we go.
I mean, he did a great graphic novel of his own called Same Difference and Other Stories. And he also wrote one of the Minx books called Good as a Lily.
And the artists will be there.
Yep, Jesse Hamm, the artist of that book, will also be at Comics and Stories this weekend. So, I mean, those are definitely good guys to check out, see what books they've got to show off. And then there's just other guys, my other favorite guys, like Brandon Graham, James Stokoe, and Moritat. I also want to see them. But, you know, they're you know, Seattle dudes, so and I see them more often. But Derek Kirkham is always a pleasure to be in the same place as him.
He is a very nice man, and he has a book coming out in this next spring, I think, from First Second Books.
Yes.
So I'm looking forward to that. And he's doing a book with Gene Yang also. I don't know if that's also from First Second, but...
I think it is.
Talented boys. And Chris Von Zombathy, Tom Horosick, and Julie Morstead, all very talented folks from Drawn and Quarterly. And Julie just won a award from the Wright Awards.
Yes, the Doug Wright Awards.
Yes, for the best arty thing from a comic publisher. I think that's basically what they're going for.
It's the best not exactly comic book?
It's something that comic book people own, but it's not a comic.
Yes.
It's an art book.
Non-narrative, graphic something.
I think they're pulling at straws for the deciding that. It's just like, there's all these great books that kind of cross over with us, so let's give awards for that.
No, I think it's good that they...
It's a gorgeous book, though. Her book is gorgeous. Like, all three of those guys put out some great stuff. And, you know what? Vancouver's got a whole lot of talented folks, and I think you should come down, check it out. Free to come, and but you should still buy comics from these great cartoonists. Till then, bid you all adieu. We'll leave with another track for Mr. Byrne. How's that sound, boys?
Yeah, sounds wonderful.
Okay. Oh, and Crimes and Treasons up next. We'll be right back.